Today, April 4th, marks the 48th anniversary of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination. King's father, Martin Luther King Sr., headed Atlanta's NAACP branch, and in 1944, King Jr. chaired the Youth Membership Committee of the Atlanta NAACP Youth Council. Although King believed in the power of nonviolent direct action, he understood that it worked best when paired with the litigation and lobbying efforts of the NAACP. On Sunday at Riverside Church, the Reverend Cornell Brooks spoke about the beginnings of the NAACP, founded by blacks and white progressives. This was back in 1909. He says race is much more nuanced.
And we're not dealing with 1950, 1960, old school discrimination at the ballot box, namely black and white. What we're seeing here is a kind of inclusivity to the exclusivity. That is to say, young people having their right to the ballot box franchise, constrained. Latinos, Native Americans, rural Americans, even senior citizens. So the point being here is we're facing new versions of old challenges that are infinitely more complex, that require broader, more diverse coalitions.
And broader coalitions, according to Brooks, are being forged, like with Black Lives Matter. He says they share the same criminal justice space on the same digital stage.
What you see is coordination and collaboration on the ground, principally because legacy organizations, of which the NAACP and the Urban League represent, they're organized in a very hierarchical way. Black Lives Matter is organized more organically, and so it's not a matter of like CEO to CEO, COO to COO, having conversations at this level. What you find is in Minneapolis, the NAACP and Black Lives Matter are working together around the tragedy of Jamar Clark. In Chicago, you see collaboration at that level. In Flint, but the point being here is these are real collaborations. It's not a matter of exchanging position papers, signing an MOU. It's people getting together and taking on a tragedy in real time. A lot of that has to do with the ways in which we're both organized. Now, one of the things I think is critically important is for legacy organizations to pick up the speed and responsiveness of younger organizations, but also younger organizations to pick up the infrastructure and the policy apparatus of older organizations. Mm-hmm. We need each other. This is a multi-generational fight.
Brooks says we're going into the first election in 50 years without the full protection of the Voting Rights Act. The Reverend Dr. Cornell Brooks spoke with Reverend Bertrand Russell at Riverside Church on Sunday. Also this weekend, the Reverend Jesse Jackson held a news conference in Chicago. This was at the Rainbow Push Coalition. He sounded the alarm. He says voter surrenderers are growing in great numbers. That voter suppression is one thing, but voter surrender is worse when you have the right to vote and don't use it.
In South Carolina alone, there are 900,000 African Americans registered, and the governor won by 60,000. When 1,000 registered did not vote, that's called surrender. In Louisiana, that 500,000 blacks unregistered. The right wing won by less than 300,000 on both occasions. Red state could be blue state if we in fact register our hopes and register and vote our numbers. In Michigan, 530,000 registered, only 100,000 voted. Do not surrender. Do not turn that rope loose. We're in a struggle for the soul of our nation, for the destiny of our struggle, and so don't do that.
On May 17, 1957, 3 years to the day after the Supreme Court's historic decision in Brown versus Board of Ed, Dr. King stood before the Lincoln Memorial to demand that every American be able to access the ballot.
All types of conniving methods are still being used to prevent Negroes from becoming registered voters. The denial of this sacred right is a tragic betrayal of the highest mandates of our democratic tradition. So our most urgent request to the President of the United States and every member of Congress is to give us the right to vote. Give us the ballot, and we will no longer have to worry the federal government about our basic rights. give us the ballot, and we will no longer plead to the federal government for passage of an anti-lynching law. We will, by the power of our vote, write the law on the statute books of the South and bring an end to the dastardly acts of the hooded perpetrators of violence. Give us the ballot, and we will transform the salient misdeeds of bloodthirsty mobs into the calculated good deeds of orderly citizens. Give us the ballot, and we will fill our legislative halls with men of goodwill and send to the sacred halls of Congress men who will not sign a Southern manifesto because of their devotion to the manifesto of justice. Give us the ballot, and we will place judges on the benches of the South who will do justly and love mercy. And we will place at the head of the Southern states governors who have felt not only the tang of the human, but the glow of the divine. Give us the ballot, and we will quietly and nonviolently, without rancor or bitterness, implement the Supreme Court's decision of May 17, 1954.
8 years later, President Lyndon Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act into law with Dr. King at his side. But as Reverend Jackson points out, voter surrender is a major problem. New York City's comptroller Scott Stringer released a report over the weekend. It says only 1 in 4 registered New York City voters participated in the 2014 midterm general election, and New York State's turnout was ranked 48th out of 50 states. New York City's primary is April 19th. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.